Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, science, and a few other general fields of understanding in humans' definition. Tonight I thought we'd talk about the creator's economy. Now, what do I mean by that? There's been a lot of discussion by a number of people about what should be the way our economy and the economies of other nations and the whole world be. And I thought it'd be kind of interesting to explore what the creator's economy is. And I mean that in a wide sense of how there is the, we'll say, frugal use of time and energy, and also how it is that the Creator seems to have set up our universe based upon, of course, many different ideas, some of which you're familiar with, and some maybe you're not so familiar with. If you've been listening to the many years I've been on the radio, you probably know it might have something to do with a kind of, we'll say, cosmology philosophy called ageless wisdom, which basically is an explanation of how and why the universe is set up. So let me define for you what I mean by economy. And, of course, I'll define the creator or God as well. But let's talk about the economy to begin with. The economy is the method in the physical dimension where we all hang out right now. Now, we're not going to live here forever. As a matter of fact, this is going to be a short-term stay in a relative sense. But it has to do with the nature of how to deal with forms that are made very, very dense and require huge amounts of energy to construct and to interact and any level of intelligence with. The reason for that is that the forms themselves, okay, the things that we call bodies and things around us, I'm sitting in a chair right now, you may be listening over an instrument that's a form. Even the energy of hearing my voice is a kind of form in itself. So it's all this density that comes about because of a thing called gravitation or gravitational energy that is unique in the dimension of time and space that we are living in right now. If we could instantly travel in consciousness, and therefore in our awareness as well, to the next dimension of time and space, the whole dimension. That dimension is a dimension called astral, and the type of energy that exists there is much less dense because gravity is much less. And we're talking less by not a few times, but maybe a few thousand times. And so consequently, when gravity becomes much less dense, the forms take on a different characteristic, and it takes very little energy in comparison to where we are to create movement, to change the form, and to allow some level of more intelligence in the interactions between forms. So energy takes on a less, we'll say, restrictive role. Now, since in the dimension of time and space that we all are living in right now, it is so difficult to cause movement, and energy itself is resistant to change. Now, the change of energy from one state to another develops something called power. And so power is a very difficult thing to maintain or to even create in the dimension that we presently exist in. Because power is so difficult, it requires a lot, we'll say, of effort on the part of anything that is alive, like us, to achieve a change. Because in order to change, any part of life has to cause a change in energy using some form of power. Unfortunately, this is the conundrum that we are put in, which we really put ourselves in, so that we can grow more of our Creator in the most difficult of all dimensions of time and space in which to live, the one that we're presently inhabiting. And this brings about the importance of a thing called economy. On a small scale, economy means the ability to make change with the least amount of power exerted in this situation and the most amount of intelligence in the interactions between one form and another. That's what economy is. Now, you might say, well, that sounds too simple. Actually, I like that definition because it is simple. Now, there are other definitions, and of course, you can get into all these complex issues that require, unfortunately, a great deal more in the long run explanation, and probably aren't going to get you much closer to the truth. Now, is my definition perfect? No, it's a generalized explanation. Perfection would mean that the definition would incorporate the solution to economy. And right now, I'm only suggesting a beginning place where we can understand some of the problems with economy. But by the end of today's program, we might actually come up with some solutions. It's just that at the beginning, it would be pretty hard to state those in any meaningful way. And I think a lot of people would say, what is he talking about? You know, he starts these shows and loses everybody right off the bat. Well, I hope not. I hope that's not going to be the season. Because we're always talking about things that are kind of scientific and they also are metaphysical, meaning they're on the bleeding edge of physics. And they sometimes provide us with explanations that take a lot of thought to really understand. But then again, there's some simplicity here. Because if my definition even explains a part of economy and God's creation of it, then I'm on the way to probably being able to continue the program and talk with some degree of credibility. Okay, so again, restating kind of what I just said, economy is a means of providing intelligent coordinated responses, intelligent reactions from one energy to another that uses the least amount of power and does so in a way which allows something else to take place. Now, that something else is really interesting because it's two parts of the mind of our own Creator that we can choose to become more aware of and to actually co-create in. And those two parts are called spirit. Some people like the word spiritual. Spirit is thought of our Creator. The two parts are the purpose and freedom and liberty and we'll call creativity of life itself and our Creator, balanced with the inclusiveness and love and guidance, and we'll also call it the most conscious and loving part of anything that exists in our universe put together. Notice that freedom and purpose actually come first. The love, along with wisdom, by the way, and the inclusiveness also are a part of the spiritual thought of our Creator. Also, some people would say, and I agree with this, planning. But not planning that gains more control and power over anyone or anything else. Because if God wanted that, God could have that instantly because God created us. It so happens that God created us to be free, because that's the first part of its thought, and to not control us, to deliberately and consciously restrict its control and give up its control so that we can gain our own and grow to become a part of and eventually a very significant part of it, God. This is how it grows. It grows by the life that it initiates and it protects by allowing a system of economy that does not force control on the life that it creates. It's a wonderful being, in my estimation. Truly beautiful. If you consider these beyond noble, because nobility is really a virtue of humanity, but beyond that, in terms of God, something truly remarkable in comparison to even the way the most altruistic of human beings presently function. I kind of get choked up when I think about this, because there is no better, greater, more conscious, more magnanimous, more wonderful system of economy than the Creator's economy. It's a truly amazing gift to even consider what this system is like. I'm not saying I know all of how it works, but I can tell you the glimpses I can share with you are humbling and wondrous. Something that we as humans could strive for if we choose to, and hopefully as I continue with today's show, it'll make more sense to those who may not be. Not because they want to be against their Creator, but because they may not know better. They may have been duped or think incorrectly. They may also have selfish motives that aren't to become antithetical to the Creator, but because they have needs and desires, they become illusioned and seek something that is away from their Creator. This is unfortunate, and it's happening right today. Most of the economies that we speak about on a much more smaller scale in the world that we occupy, because it is illusioned and dark at this level, this dimension of time and space we live in, most of these economies don't even come close to replicating the Creator's economy. They oftentimes go in a very different direction, oftentimes antithetical, meaning literally the opposite direction from God's own thought. So they're anti-spiritual. They're anti-God. And that's a big problem for the people who create these economies and the people who live within them. Okay, let me go through, without getting any further into that side of the story right now, let me go through some of the elements that you may be familiar with so you can better understand the Creator's economy. Because I just talked about big concepts, but examples are always helpful in such large places that we stand in the light of our own Creator. it's difficult sometimes to grasp these huge concepts because they are the concepts of God itself, at least as I can best explain them and as I best understand them. And that doesn't mean that I can do either in doing justice to them. Okay. What then are the examples that some of what I said could be, we'll say, modeled or explained by? Well, for some of you, you may be interested in and even understand some elements of evolution. Now, you hear me say many, many times, and I say it again tonight, there's nothing wrong with evolution. There's only the only thing that's wrong with evolution is human understanding of it. Evolution is a wondrous invention created by the Creator to allow life to grow in a fashion until a certain stage where it is free to do as pretty much it chooses to. And only the forces of our dimension, particularly of time and space, restrain, constrain, and eventually, at times, destroy it. So there's a lot of forces involved in evolutionary development. You might say, well, why would God allow a dimension of its own universe to be so encumbered by forces? Forces are one energy that goes against another energy and wastes power and reduces, intelligent activity. Now you can say, wait a second. Didn't you say that God is this great being who even in this dimension of time and space can have perfect intelligent activity? It can. But the life that it creates initially must learn on its own, making free choices and trying to exist within the form that it inhabits to survive and to flourish and propagate and eventually develop itself into higher and higher levels of energy and consciousness as it goes on in its development. This we call evolution, sometimes referred to by some people as survival of the fittest. You've heard that word. And you've also heard things like it is, unfortunately, in some people's minds, a contest or competition between the haves and the have-nots, between the more powerful of life and the less, between the more successful in life and the less. And it has many, many challenges for every kind of life up until you reach human development, and then some special things do take place, which we're going to get to in a minute. Okay, so competition is a major part of the Creator's economy for apparently all life until you at least reach human levels. And then also, we're going to get into it, as I said, but it really does continue, but in a new kind of way, because we, as human beings, have much higher consciousness and a much greater level of thought, one which we can actually directly sense our Creator's own thought or spirit. No living creature below that of human has the senses to do that, the awareness. So we are unique in that we can recognize our own Creator in others, in the world in general, and within ourselves. That's a great thing, but makes us different from any other life below that of ourselves. Now let's start with the life below human so we can understand how it is that evolution is so important, and that it isn't something to be thrown away just because you happen to be profoundly spiritual or religious. It's just that you need to understand it better. Okay, so evolution provides life with the ability to compete. Now, the competition is in the ability to eventually develop intelligent activity. But before the activity could become intelligent, the first thing that life has to do is learn how to use power. And that's a problem, because power in and of itself is strictly in the third part of God's mind. It is not necessarily on its own spiritual. Only when power is used in a spiritual way, though, does the outcome of the power, which is a change in energy from one form to another, become spiritual itself. It's become part of God. Otherwise, it lies and can lie very deeply away from God. So someone could become amazingly powerful and yet amazingly not God, which we call sometimes evil. That doesn't mean that God said, well, gee, let all things become evil, because that's an interesting way of dealing with life. No, God allows us to find it or not, and to choose it or not, and not of God is evil. So that allows us this amazing way for us to exist, but before us, life doesn't have that profound sense of God. So it only functions within a world in which the more powerful exist over the less, and until human beings can inhabit a world and change that world to become more godly. Unfortunately, those worlds, including Earth as we know it right now, because we haven't done a great job yet, tend to be rather dark, meaning missing most of the consciousness and the light, which is the thought of God. So, unfortunately, evolution, in and of itself, is very competitive. It develops a lot of power in life, but the power that life develops takes on a darker nature than that of an enlightened nature, in worlds of which human beings either are not yet present or have failed so far to develop enough God within themselves to help the lower kingdoms below themselves, eventually by bringing them into themselves through civilization, their own civilizations, to become something greater, become more godly. So it's up to us, human beings. Yeah, really, I'm not kidding you. Now, I'm not being ethnocentric. I'm not saying we're just so wonderful. I'm saying just the opposite. I'm saying human beings at the present time are in a unique position of acting more like life below humans than life above humans. We're sort of like on the cross, you might say. And in one way, we can develop amazing power. But in another way, we can use it in ways that is highly destructive, highly forceful, and not very intelligent in its interactions. So the power doesn't grow life towards God. It destroys life away from God. Instead of emulating our Creator by seeking to give freedom to other life and consciousness to other life and give up control for the purpose of growth and liberty, and allow other life the same opportunity, we do the opposite in many circumstances. All too many governments and peoples have sometimes understood what I've just said, and then allowed themselves, their nations, their interactions between nations, to become the basis, the most negative, the most anti-God types of governing and economies that could ever or may ever exist on this planet. Okay, so this is the interesting anomaly, we might call it, that human beings have to discover who and what God is, including the Creator's own economy. We have to find the Creator's economy and recreate it in new and, we'll say, more promising ways, in the ways that we live and the interactions that we take with each other and between nations and within nations, in order to grow more of God in ourselves and in others. Okay, hopefully this is starting to make some sense. If it doesn't, you know what? You can call me, even right now, and we can talk. If not, you can think about it some more. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is that there are a number of great thinkers, tremendously great thinkers, that have come to the same kinds of conclusions I am talking about right now. And they lived hundreds of years ago, some of them only tens or 20s or 50, but many of them lived hundreds of years ago. And a majority of the ones that I'm familiar with actually helped to create, they're the founders, that means, of the United States of America. Now, some of you I know listen to this show, and you're not in the U.S. But I know from what I've read and heard that you are in awe and want to have more of what people in the U.S. have in your place in the world. Many of you live in nations and economies where you don't have the freedoms that we have. Some of you have trouble or are not listening to me tonight because your own government is preventing that. Some of you also have an understanding enough of economy to recognize that your economy is overly controlled, excessively centrally planned, and has very little competition. And you lament because you know the truth that some people, actually I almost think a large number of people here in the U.S. are duped presently into misunderstanding and do not recognize the great hazards and dangers that we have embarked upon, and so have many other nations who are seeking to have something that may be more like the Creator on an average in the populace, but the leaders of those nations are not necessarily so magnanimous nor so virtuous. It is important to realize that the Creator, as I understand it and am trying to explain to you, is a being that has already solved the equations that I'm trying to explain tonight. It isn't that this Creator just haphazardly threw stuff against the wall and decided to see what would stick. It has an understanding of economy. It has an understanding of all the principles that are virtuous and create a wondrous universe. It just does not control or demand or try in any way to prevent us from doing something different. It allows it because it knows that otherwise life would be a puppet show, and there would be no real meaning to life, to the itself, and no meaning to God in its own growth, because it would not be growth. It would just be a repetition of its own echoed thought. To prevent that echoing of thought, God adopted the role of humility, not the role of arrogance. Gave up egotism, if it had any, for seeking the most wondrous of all gifts, the right to create, the right to be free, the right to have liberty, and the right to also give that to others as a wonderful gift of love and inclusiveness. Everybody says, well, isn't giving part of planning, and why isn't it that economies that are extremely structured and planned and controlled, then part of God's thought? Well, that's kind of like a convoluted misunderstanding, an illusion of great proportions. Yes, you could say you're giving. I'm giving to people the right to listen to what I say and to do what I say and to do what I force them to do because I know better. I know better. I know how to control all the elements of choice, all the elements of creativity. So only the creations that are done by the few can be done by the masses and the many. A frightening prospect. But more and more, humanity moves in this direction on a conscious level and did so for thousands of years subconsciously before it then became a conscious choice to actually do this stuff. That's absolutely frightening. That means we've gotten worse. Because on one side, if you want to do things that are subconscious and against the way the Creator does it, at least if it's subconscious, you don't know better. You can't really figure the whole thing out, and you just kind of lumber around. And that's how people were thousands of years ago. And so they did the best they could, and they still created competitive markets, even free markets, with minimal government interaction because technology wouldn't permit government and those running it to be too intrusive. But as we've developed ourselves and our ability to be in control through technological development, that's civilization itself, it gives us more power. Power, unfortunately, can be very corrupting. And it allows those who gain the greater elements of power to seek to consciously control others for their own benefit of superiority and arrogance. The belief that they can actually, out of the trillions and trillions of interactions between living creatures, determine what is the limited, oftentimes almost single, way that people should exercise their ability to create power and change forms of energy and to produce new forms and to exercise their creativity. So in other words, you become a non-creator. Some people recently I've been reading call it a serf. Within a kingdom, but different than kingdoms used to be. Now the kingdom is run by those who are educated, have degrees, have, we'll say, what they call knowledge, and form groups around them of pseudo-knowledgeable others to decide what's best for all the rest of us. This has been going on progressively as humans are becoming more and more mentally focused. It's moved from an emotional, subconscious way to control to a mental, conscious, that is much more dark, has a greater level of evil within itself, and seeks to exercise control at levels never possible because it uses some levels of technology to assist it. And with the communications age that we're in now, it's much easier to do because propaganda, which started just about 100 years ago in full force in parts of many governments, has become the means to the end. And instead of attempting to help others to become creators themselves, it seeks to enslave in a serf way the rest of the elements of society. Frightening. Oh, yes, it started with some people that we're familiar with. Karl Marx, Engels, his associate. And it moved into fascism and Nazism, Mussolini, and of course Hitler and all the gang. All these were operational models of using power for singular purposes. There may have been a few dozen of them, a few hundred singular purposes with maybe one or two biggies. And the purpose is the only thing that's different between fascism and communism. They have a different purpose in mind for the way they want their social structure to create even more power for those who are running the show. Different way of manifesting, but not that much. Basically, they seek to collectively control and to do so in ways that are against God. Now, some of us knew this, some people knew this, when it was happening 50, 100 years ago. Today, we've forgotten. We've gone to sleep. Not too long ago, I talked to some people who said, we're socialists. We're glad to be socialists. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I realized in speaking with them that they didn't know what a socialist was, but that's okay. That's not really the point. If you really understand what this stuff is all about, it gives you the wheelies because it is so pervasive and it's such a scam. The scam is, well, you'll get something for nothing. The government will take care of you. Well, the government doesn't take care of anybody other than itself. People need to take care of themselves and use government in a limited way that creates an economy that is inclusive in ways enough so that in places where competition is not really effective, and there's a few of them, not very many, but there are, that we as humans can take over. And using true democracy, we can find solutions by running the government ourselves rather than it running us. And then in all the other ways, the 98% of the other ways, because there's maybe 1 to 2% of the economy that needs to actually be helped because there isn't sufficient competition for it to happen. I'll give you an example. Let's say you had to build a lot of roads fairly quickly, and you couldn't wait for a toll road to be developed. Well, you might need to build roads, and you do so because the majority, the vast majority, with very little objection from the minority. So roads aren't a bad thing. We'll go for that. You can use some of our collective wealth for that purpose. But the rest of our wealth is ours to compete with, to struggle with, and to create with, and hopefully to reduce our struggle so that we don't develop more forces in our lives and become more like our Creator. So that we, too, can become charitable and loving and virtuous. We can develop these things in ourselves, but we can only do so if we're free to do so. I want you to think about what I just said, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And I was talking with the engineer about some of his interests in developing power. It was a little different than what I was just talking about. It had to do with some vehicles and things that he has interest in. Power has a lot of different uses. And interestingly, it's everything from how to move from here to there to how to move from being human to a superhuman. So there's lots of different elements to power and economy. Okay, hopefully you heard the first part of this show. Thanks for listening. And let's continue on with some of the ideas about the creator's economy and see how we can apply this to economies in our own world and places where you may be living and having some, we'll say, disgruntled concerns about what may be taking place. One of the issues that has been developed by a movement called the Progressive Movement sort of happened as a result of a reactionary result to there being a out-of-balance condition in a number of places, but it actually was more about the U.S. than almost any place else on Earth. And it happened in the late 19th century. What was taking place was this. There was a bastardization of the capitalistic system, as we are familiar. One of the credos of capitalism is a free market. And the free markets were being corruptively challenged by giving monopolistic kind of advantages to various people, sometimes companies, by government because of payoffs and kickbacks and political hackery done by these individuals to control the government and take it away from the control of people. This was taking place ever since the Civil War in the United States. President Lincoln, a great president, decided that in order to win the Civil War, he had to win the battle of economy. He expanded the economy tremendously. And he did so by rewarding those who went along with his economic strivings, including the expansion of railroads and supply methods so that the Union soldiers, the Union Army, would have tremendous advantages over the Confederates. And he won the war that way. Everybody thought he won because of great generals or his own strategies, because he was very involved in military strategies. But the truth is, he won because of economics. He was able to get supplies to the people that needed them on the battlefield dozens of times faster in some circumstances than the Confederates were. And he was able to keep them going with these supplies. And so that's what really won it. The Confederates are actually oftentimes slightly better fighters and even better at strategy. But they weren't well supplied. They didn't have the railroads. And they didn't have the means of commerce that Lincoln pushed. Problem was that Lincoln, had he survived, may have gotten rid of political hackery and some of the corruptness in his own government, which then just exploded in the following next presidents, vice president, then becoming President Johnson, and then, of course, the notorious Grant, and all of the terrible corrupt issues that took place under his administration, and then further corruptness down the line. Now, the United States had corrupt political system really almost since the start. But the corruptness of this particular system that came about because of expansion in economy became more and more, we'll say, solidified as a means of gaining undue advantages in business. So when we finally get to the 1880s, 1890s, capitalism couldn't even be found. It was mostly monopolies and a lot of mistaken, we'll say, concepts about capitalism. And the market wasn't free anymore. It wasn't free enough. There were also other social issues that were ignored sometimes to the advantage of some people who wanted to make a lot of money, regardless of what the consequences were to the environment and people. So a movement became, we'll say, stronger that was anti-liberalism called progressivism. You might say, what does anti-liberalism mean? It means progressives do not believe that people should be free. They believe that government should control people. They believe that government should control people for the betterment of the people, because progressives themselves believe they know better than anybody else how to run things. Now, the first president who was a true progressive was Teddy Roosevelt. And he had a lot of ideas of wanting to shape the nation. And his ideas were not necessarily bad. I don't want you to think that. It's just that they were anti-creative, anti-freedom. And instead of the monopolies being run by corrupt individuals who were affecting the government, more and more the government started to run the monopolies. And so instead of government cleaning up the problem with capitalism, which it could have done, in the United States, it decided to go the other way and say, well, we'll just take it over. We'll introduce a progressive income tax, one in which we can model social structures and redistribution of wealth the way we choose. So the structure of income tax was created about 1910 from edicts and understandings and thoughts of the Roosevelt administration before then. He eventually was voted out of office. But the point is that it stuck. And so did the Federal Reserve, which also was controlling money. Now, this was done with some good ideas at hand. Like, if evil people are controlling money, why not have the government do it so that the evil people can't control it? It would have been a lot easier and much more creative to create an economy that had freer markets, more open markets, and prevented monopolies. But unfortunately, there wasn't that wisdom. And there still isn't. Progressives still believe very much of what I just said. Today, they call themselves progressive Democrats, but the more honest ones call themselves socialists. Very few of them are honest enough to call themselves socialists because many people still remember the socialists called Nazis and the socialists called communists and the socialists called Maoists and the socialists called everything imaginable other than free. So this is what took place. And the concern, of course, is that today the progressives are now, for the first time, in the greatest seats of power within the political structure in the United States. We're far more progressive and more socialistic than Western Europe. How do I know that? Because a week ago, our president met with the nations, the leading nations first, and then a week following, the remaining nations throughout not just Western Europe, but the rest of the world, the G8 and G20. And he found that most of the nations were telling him that they needed more free markets, they needed less government intervention and control, which is called spending, by the way, and they needed to reduce the debt levels that they have enslaved their people to. And if you remember in the first section, I said that we're headed towards being serfs. Well, the way the government makes you a serf is by destroying the economy that you live within and forcing you in a position of poverty and destitute. And then from that point, you have no or very few choices. You live hand to mouth, only what the government permits you to have. It's the way of the old, the way of the kings, but with a new twist. They don't call them kings anymore. They call them senators, congressmen, czars, president, vice president, secretary of this or that. It's all the same thing. Despots. Now, this is an interesting point. We have come from the creator's economy to the present-day thought, and I really went through a lot of, we'll say, shortcuts. There's a lot more to explain about this, but I can't do it in one show. So what I'm trying to do is to kind of give you a backdrop so you can do some thinking about this after the show and see how accurate what I'm saying is, whether it makes any sense, even if you are one of the people in that government I'm talking about. I know there's a couple of you that are. So here's the point. Here's the point. If we're going to really understand the creator's economy, we need to understand what's wrong with ours and how come we went off the deep end. What is it about the human nature that would be so wrong when we are given the gift of awareness of our own creator? We have two senses that allow us to sense how our creator creates and how we can help to create with it. We can directly sense it, and yet we screw up. How is it possible? And the way that it has developed is this. Human beings are in contest, in competition with their creator. The creator created competition so that we could grow, so that we could learn forces and learn ways to reduce forces to increase intelligent activity. But unfortunately, we became in competition with the Creator. Most progressives, I want to mention this again about progressives. Most progressives, even if they go to church or they do many other things, have a very weak understanding of God based upon my own discussions with quite a few of them. Not anywhere near all of them, or even a majority, but quite a few. And so the interesting thing about this is that in human beings, the nature of God itself is sometimes confused with self. We confuse ourselves with our own Creator because we do want to be like our Creator, but not as our Creator really is, but as we, as the Creator, want to be. In us is the fantasy of being our Creator before we have the wisdom, before we have the love in wisdom, and before we have the courage, and before we have the true meaning and purpose of God, and before we have the creation of God, and before we have the power of God, although we have a lot of power these days, and before we have almost anything of God, we seek to be God just because we want it, we desire it. It's the true corruption of power that leads to this very unusual position. To be able to sense our own Creator and choose to be what it is not, just so we can say we are. It's crazy. Progressivism is crazy. It's crazy not because the people who practice it are in some way insane. It's crazy because the people who practice it are on a road of self-destruction of a kind and in a way that's greater than anything imaginable. But they're leading the rest of us down the same path. Even if you're not a progressive or a socialist, as some people might describe it, it doesn't matter. If you're caught in a system and the system is ready for a train wreck, you're going to be wrecked along with it. Now, how do you get off this crazy thing? Well, one of the advantages we in the United States have is while our government is being taken apart piece by piece and power and control is being centralized within it, again, it's done by expenditure and it's done by edict. Some people call it executive order. And by not following the rule of law, ignoring laws. This last week, it's very interesting. In the United States, there was a group called the New Black Panthers, somewhat like the old, but actually not. And in the last election, they were controlling in Philadelphia and other places, polling places, not letting people vote who were not going to vote for Obama and other people in his group. And they were caught on tape doing this. But the White House and the Justice Department decided to let these people off, that they really didn't do anything wrong. They only violated some of the most important laws in our country. And so luckily there's a secondary group, partly run by Congress, that is following up in exposing this great corruption. Now, it's important to realize that the people who are doing this don't think of themselves as evil. They think of themselves as God. They don't understand God anymore because they've decided to be God before they are justified in having any of that kind of authority or power. It's very, very difficult for people who don't have that urge to understand the people that do. And this is the problem. It's the same reason why we have trouble seeing evil, too. It's because it is such a good use of power. It uses power to hide itself. It uses propaganda, which are really lies. It uses the media, which is supposed to be helpful, including reporters and news organizations, newspapers, radio, television. It uses all those things. Now, are there others that have done this in the past? Oh, sure, absolutely. The only difference is the others did it usually just to get rich, but not to necessarily control everyone else. That isn't them. Oh my, this is a scary thing. But it's an old game. We should have been able to recognize it. Back in the World War I and World War II, we should have been able to see this. People did see it while they were fighting those things. They did recognize it. But what happened? Well, you know, one or two generations doesn't seem like a long time. But each generation has to relearn its own past, its own history, and gain an understanding of it all over again. While the world was advancing and technology was taking over in many respects, humans were forgetting. We're good at forgetting. And we were succumbing to materialism and giving up the search for our creator. Materialism is a way of looking at economy as something that is strictly without God. It's a matter of having things that you want, getting things that you want, and disregarding the nature of what it means. So if you can get a new car and you have to steal it or do something else to get it, that's fine. You don't have to actually commit a crime to have it. You might just commit the evil of ignoring all the virtues of God. It's something to think about. I want you to think about that for a few minutes. I want to tell you about something that's close to me and important to me. We, being a group of people that I work with, are presently working on a way of reducing pain, just a sensation of pain. And believe it or not, we've actually done pretty good at it. Using natural ingredients, we've come up with a formula that we're working on. I'm not saying it's available right now, it isn't. But I'm just telling you about it because it's important stuff to share with you. I think we're going to call it freedom from pain or something like that. And this stuff like lasts about 8 hours, give or take. And it's all plant stuff, you know, herbal stuff, and it's just great because there's 7 major chakras in the human body. And each major chakra has dozens or more of minor chakras that don't have any consciousness connected to them. And they're in lines connected together called meridians. That's part of a thing called the natus system. It's really the etheric or electromagnetic part of the human being. And pain is a signal that something isn't right in the energy flow between these centers. The energy that flows is a thing called chi, or Pingala, which is the first type of energy that comes from Earth itself, Kundalini energy. And that energy keeps us alive, by the way. But it also, when it doesn't move right, it causes us to experience pain. It's a good thing because it tells us that it's not moving right. And when it's not moving right, we're in a process, it may be a very slow one, of dying. So, if you can relieve the pain, at least it makes the person able to, we'll say, figure out what it's doing wrong and maybe correct it. It doesn't necessarily correct the nature of the chi energy itself. That's based upon making right choices and creating virtue in your life and in the world. So we're only helping a person do that by relieving the pain, because believe it or not, the pain is a signal, and it's a good one. But if it lasts long and it becomes chronic and severe, it actually inhibits the person's thinking rationally. And they become more and more self-focused, which then creates a spiral of death, eventually of dying. And it will slow down their life, their creativity. They'll live in great pain, and they won't understand why. So we decided to come up with this formula because we thought it would help people. Now, there are other things that do this, but they're called narcotics and stuff, and you get addicted to them, and they become less and less effective the more you use. So, I mean, it's an endless circle of not getting anywhere. And the great thing about this stuff is that it's non-addictive. Yeah, it's non-addictive. And I say that in a physiological sense, but even in an emotional or psychological sense, people usually don't react to it as an addictive way. And it relieves enough of the pain, more so than just about anything else out there, that you can get your head around and grasp what you're doing wrong, if you choose to. Now, if you don't, all it will do is make you feel better for a while, but in the meantime, you might still be making the same mistakes, and the underlying problems may not go away. So pain needs to be reduced so that we can think clearly and we can make the right decisions. But if we choose to still not do that, once the pain is reduced or gone, then we're open to catastrophe. So I wanted you to know about this. We are working on this. I think in about a month or so, some of it might be available, maybe in trials, but I don't know if it'll be available for the general public to get it. But nonetheless, it's real exciting because I've seen the results of this stuff. Fantastic. It works on most pains coming from a wide, vast variety of areas because it hits most of the minor centers, not all of them. There's still 20% or so of the minor centers that are left, but 80% of the minor centers is huge, huge. That's a lot of the pains that people have. Huge. And let me tell you this. Some of the strongest narcotics, morphine, Oxycontin, you name it, only hit maybe 40, 50% of the minor centers. So those are very narrow pain relievers in comparison. Something to think about. Okay, let's get back to the creator's economy. And there is something I can connect it to what I just talked about. How do you like that for a segue? When we are dealing with the pain of not having an economy that's functioning, and we in the United States are about to face this, there is pain there, too. The pain of not having enough power to sustain the level of life that we have been. And losing freedom, the loss of freedom and liberty, is the single most dreaded result from what is presently taking place in the world, and particularly to us in the United States, to we in the United States. It is a severe, severe pain. It's psychological, and it's emotional, and it's interactional. When competition is cut down, and you eliminate most of what people call small businesses, you also eliminate those kinds of jobs, people's meaning in life is tremendously reduced. Whether they're working for a business that is competitive, or they're running one, or part of running one. In either case, there's tremendous advantages to competition because it allows people to adjust on a moment-to-moment basis their creation. It allows them to discover more about themselves and God. It allows them to reduce the forces of the marketplace as well as the forces in the world and to solve equations that are truly godly. Those equations are mysteries. some of which I know a little about, but I can't reveal them, because to even discuss them would take hours and hours of teaching beforehand. It just can't be done in this milieu that we're in right now. But solving even one of the equations that allows us to compete without having monopolies, without confining others and reducing their competition, with a kind of almost ballet in which inclusiveness is part of the process, but control of others' choices is not. And central planning, except for that 1% or 2% that is purely in the realm of government, because only government can do those things, is gone. In place of central planned things, we have a beautiful symphony and ballet that is taking place. And being part of it is the only way to find all of God while we're alive in this world. If we deny this to others, we also deny it to ourselves. And the result is destruction of the life that our soul chose to take upon itself as a great sacrifice in this world, so that God could be co-created with and grow. It's an anti-God process, and we've got to become aware of what's really happening. It allows us, in this correction, we'll call it, in solving the formula, it allows us to do things that we cannot do in the present world. Let me give you some ideas. One of the things that it gives us great latitude in is the ability to replace welfare and the social justice redistribution nonsense, which destroys competition and makes everybody slaves, into charity and such love of others, because others are part of God. How does the charity work? Does it work through, like, your church or whatever? Well, in the past, that's one way it was done, but that's still somewhat controlling. Actually, the new way, part of the equation is the new way, and we as a spiritual group are doing this. Those of you who know us or have read Afterlife Love, you may know something about this, know that what we do is we create a climate in which others can co-create if they choose to. If they choose not to, then we say goodbye to them and go on. And we try to do this with everybody, but it doesn't work very often. And it doesn't work because some of the people we've chosen to do this with are the real difficult ones. They think they're doing it, and they're not. They're usually people who have failed in business, failed in trying to be creative, and are hanging out with their heads down, trying to do nothing. We do this a lot, sometimes at our detriment, believe me. If you take those people in, watch out. But nonetheless, the process is one of charity. The charity is to try to help people in numerous ways that they don't understand and sometimes resent. And you can say, whoa, what kind of equation is that? I don't want to have nothing to do with that. Let me out of here. Well, I don't. It's called spiritual sacrifice. Sometimes, and this is what God does, this is what the Creator does, it gives up great amounts of itself. It gives up tremendous amounts of what we would call power to others to help them to grow. Sometimes they have no idea that's what you're doing. Usually they don't. But we do it anyway. We try. It's not easy. And the process has unique qualities to it in terms of the equation factor. Because part of the outcome is to help others to do the same, because it doesn't work when too small a number are doing it, like right now. We're not very successful. But success is not the way you measure it. It's the advancement of consciousness that you're trying to do. Sometimes the advancement of consciousness doesn't happen till years later to the people that you try to help. It's just the way it is. We accept it. Because we have patience. And because we see what the formula is. The formula is to be a soul to others, to help others, to learn how to help others. Pay it forward, if you like. To learn to be wise givers. Now, we don't give to people the things they want. We usually give them what they don't want. But we're still giving them something. We're giving them the urge, the need, the right to be somewhat autonomous, to try and do something better by helping us to do things better, even if they reject and ignore and fight and even passive-aggressively or aggressively destroy what we're trying to do. We try to do the best we can with everyone. We don't give to people what they necessarily desire, and we may fight with great fervor against those who are trying to just take. But at the same time, we still are givers, but more wise givers than not. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we don't succeed. Oftentimes we don't succeed. So part of the equation is some kind of really crazy system. That is, to understand God well enough that you can create within God's light without fighting God, without being something different from God, and by improving God and life by helping it to do the same. Giving life its freedom to be and do what it wants to do. Sometimes that's letting people go because they want to be terribly destructive to themselves and to others. We've seen this happen time and time again. It's unfortunate, but it does take place. So, what can we do to improve economy? Well, we need to conserve. I haven't even talked tonight about that because I've been talking so much about it in the last months. But conservation and not spending wastefully, especially on corruption and to gain power, but conservation for the sake of using less to gain more, so that others can be freer themselves. That's what real conservation is. And if you do that in your life and help others to do it, you are doing part of God's work. Does that mean you should go off and try to create windmills or something like that, or solar panels? Not necessarily. Some of that stuff is technological crap. Very few times do those things actually pan out in terms of actually conserving energy. Conserving energy means using less. It doesn't mean creating more of it in ways that are inefficient and wasteful. Now, if it works for you and you can create a few kilowatts of energy, do it. But don't spend everything you've got trying to get off the grid while the world is being overtaken with hunger and destruction and people in power are seeking to control anything and everything they can. Don't be deluded. Don't be silly. Be wise. The Creator's economy is an economy in which another kind of formula exists than the last one I just described. This other formula is even more difficult to solve because it's more intangible. We are only learning to be 1/7 of our Creator at this level, the smallest 1/7, actually, in a sense, because the density of energy and gravity itself slows the process down to a crawl. The way to accelerate the process is to include some of an understanding of the other ways that God exists than just those within this dimension of time and space. This is true metaphysics. You have to become a metaphysician because metaphysics is the physics beyond the present level. And the present level doesn't even, as far as most physicists are concerned, most of the physicists, doesn't recognize other dimensions of time and space. It doesn't even know what those are. And so you have to become a metaphysicist to understand that they exist and what they are and how they function so that we can see God in a more full sense. And by solving that equation, we can leapfrog forward by unifying some of the dimensionality that is not here, but we can unify it with what is here. And when you do that, you take exponential leaps in consciousness and even in power. You become amazingly adept at doing many, many things. This is a true challenge. If you can solve the equation of economy at that level, you're a great metaphysician and possibly a person getting close to not being human anymore, because human beings are locked in the first equation and battling and in terrible ways losing. But to go to the next, that really opens up a whole grander universe. A bigger model of what God really is gives you tremendous abilities way beyond what the rest of the humans are doing. And you can do this. But with it has to be tremendous humility. None of this nonsense that I'm God and I'll decide what's best for everybody else. And then I'll force everybody to do my plan along with the other cronies around me. And we're all going to be doing this centralized planning of everybody's life, telling them what they can and can't do. Government for all, and people and choices for none, except us. Yeah, that's what we've got to avoid. We have to be careful not to fall into that. Or the other side of it, to being one of the victims. Oh, I love the government because it pays me money. It takes care of me. It's going to take care of my health. Yeah, you just wait. You'll see what you're going to get. There won't be any pain formulas for those folks, let me tell you, because the government won't let you have it. It'll free you too much. There is a tremendous effort that is taking place as a groundswell here in this country, but it's also going on elsewhere, for people to solve the first equation. When they do, they free their minds and their souls to finally become the better parts of being human. They become something so great that they actually can start working on the second equation. But there are bigger equations further than that. I just can't go into them even to mention them. There's no time. But we have a tremendous possibility here that we can achieve greatness still, even though right now we're on a course of destruction. I hope that the destruction can be overcome. We don't have long, a couple of years. But if we can't overcome it, then at least this show, and many others like it, and those of many other people, will have not been done in vain, because some element of history will record for those in the future what we couldn't understand today. And maybe the next generation or the one after that will finally get an understanding of, we'll say, the Creator's economy. It is this understanding that will free them if we don't do it for ourselves. This is my hope, anyway. And if that doesn't take place, well, the entire planet is contingent upon the decisions now of human beings. It's been that way for, since about 35 years now or more. And so because we're so technologically advanced that if we really go down the wrong road, we will end this world. And it will be a terrible, terrible ending. But I don't think we're going to do that. I'm hoping we're not. No, I'm not one of the people who says, well, the end of days is coming, so we might as well just all jump off the cliff together. I don't believe that. Now, you might, and that's your right to believe that. That's okay. You could still understand and even follow some of what I've said, and it may still make sense to you, but from a different perspective, possibly. Because some people are into that thought process. My thought process is to do the very best while we're here now. Because when we go on to live in the astral dimension of time and space, I've been there, spent a lot of time there, actually. And people there, one of the greatest regrets that you hear all the time from people on the other side is that they just wish they understood while they were physically alive what they now understand while they live astrally, but can no longer change the physical world because they don't have a physical body and they don't interact with physical energy. This is a great change. I don't want to be one of those people who regrets like that. I saw enough of it to know that's one place I don't want to be in. And hopefully it'll make a difference to you all out there. If you haven't read it, please read Afterlife Love. Why? Because, well, it's an interesting story, but more importantly, it gives you that perspective from those people's side. And I think it's an encouragement to live now in this world more as a part of God, more as a co-creator, to change this world into the place that you want it to be, I want it to be, and everybody wants it to be at some level. Even the most evil people ultimately do not want the world to be destroyed. What good would that do? So, interestingly, there is some commonality. There is a thread between all humans. We want this planet to continue in some fashion. Now, some people may want some people that are alive today to just vanish because they're no good next. They say, well, I don't want those people around because they're no good. And so they believe that they're all going to vanish because God's going to sweep them aside or whatever. You know, I have trouble with that because I see that God gave us freedom, and why would God suddenly come in and intervene? I think that there is grace, but there isn't a God that is truly a destroyer. It's an old thought. It really doesn't come from the New Testament, but the old in Western Christianity. It's really kind of a strange twist on things. The Yahweh who is the God of revenge, a vengeful God, one to be feared. I don't fear God. I love God. And I think God is the greatest of all loving beings. Hopefully you do too. Well, until next week, because I'm out of time and I wasn't even looking at the clock. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.